Hello, welcome in my podcast. Let's talk about you. And today we will be talking about Polish immigrants in UK, about Polish citizens living in UK, about political situation in UK and in EU generally. And before we start discussion, I would explain why did I invite Lloyd as a guest. Lloyd, because I spoke with you a few times before and you share with me some really interesting knowledge about political issues or about situation in UK and EU. So I thought that it will be worthy to share this knowledge with people who will listen this podcast. So firstly, Lloyd, you are the head of European and International Affairs in Birmingham City Council. So can you tell me more about your job, work, maybe the areas of your responsibility?
Hi. The principal responsibilities I have at Birmingham City Council are to manage the department that takes care of all of its European and international affairs. What does that mean? That means that I manage the relationships that we have with cities around the world. So we have what's called partner and sister city arrangements. They used to be called twinning. So Birmingham has relationships in China, in North America, South Africa, and around Europe. So we have 9 partner city relationships. That's one aspect of what we do. I also manage our European policy affairs. We have an office in Brussels, and we have staff in Brussels, and we work with our partners, universities and business and other stakeholders around the city and the region to develop our relationships in Brussels with the European institutions. So we get first insight on policy, intelligence regarding funding, regulation, legislation. So we build those relationships with the European institutions. We draw down European funding for Birmingham. So Birmingham has received over the last 25 years over £1 billion worth of European funds. And that runs a whole raft of projects around the city, supporting businesses, developing skills, getting people into employment, as well as collaborative projects with countries around Europe on things, whether it's around migration, climate change, demographic change, all sorts of intelligent transport, all sorts of initiatives and the challenges that cities face. We run programs to share knowledge and good practice across city boundaries. And I suppose that the last thing, which is a new addition to my work program, is Brexit. So I lead on the City Council's response to Brexit. So I have to keep abreast of the changing landscape and moving sands. It seems to be daily moving sands with regards to Brexit. And I have to try and understand what the potential impact, both positive, if there is anything positive, but predominantly negative that would emerge from Brexit and the implications for Birmingham City Council and the city as a whole.
Thank you very much that you describe everything so precisely, and now probably everybody will understand why you are the guest of this podcast and what you can share with us. Because do you remember when we met first time, I told you about, in psychology we called about it two faces of shame. The one face is I'm not good enough, and the second face is who do you think you are? That the voices in our head, that sometimes we listen them. And I told you about Polish migrants, especially Polish women who had that kind of voice in her head. And you told me that when you have been in Brussels, you saw that the women from Central Eastern Europe in EU can develop their skills and can they build a very successful career. And so can you tell me more about it? Because I think that, you know, even now I conduct some course. It's called How to Overcome Your Fear. So I work with people, with Polish migrants from Ireland, Scotland, Norway and UK. So when I ask these girls on the beginning, okay, what kind of result do you want to achieve on this course? Mostly of them told me that they had have the same experience, they have the same level of education, but because they aren't native, they place themselves lower, on the lower position, because they aren't British. So can you tell me a little bit more about this woman in EU, and what do you think about this, you know, two voices, I'm not good enough because I'm not British, for example?
When we spoke, I said to you that sometimes I think what's in your head and your interpretation or impression of what Polish women in particular think is perhaps a bit different to what I see. There may be voices in the head that may hold them back, but that's not my experience of what I've seen of, and it's not just Polish women, but Central and Eastern European women. Perhaps that's partly because that I've spent a lot of time working in Brussels, and what I would describe Brussels as is a level playing field. And when I say, what I mean by a level playing field is that I never get a sense in Brussels that it ever feels like a home for anybody. It feels like a place where everybody meets to work. So Brussels just happens to be one of these places where people from all over Europe congregate to work for the various European institutions. So there are thousands and thousands of people all over Brussels that are from all different places. So unlike being an immigrant or a migrant in the UK or in Germany or in Italy, in Brussels it seems like everybody's an immigrant, including me, including an Englishman, because I'm not from Brussels, I'm not Belgian. So that's why I think it's more of a level playing field. So the working language is often English, but then again, it's often French. So there's not one natural country or dominating country where there can be this interpretation of someone feeling of a higher authority or a higher presence than anybody else. So that's what I mean by it being a level playing field. It's lots of people, lots of different nationalities, lots of languages, lots of different cultures, what I call a melange, a huge mix of people in one place. So I think in terms of confidence, I think it's an excellent opportunity for anybody, yes, looking to develop their English or French language skills, because they are the two predominant languages. But I think also it's more of a safe environment in that it's not one particular, even though it is a country, Belgium is a country, it doesn't feel like you're dominated by Belgian culture. It is a mix. So therefore, everybody is in the same position that you're in. Everybody's a migrant in Brussels, it appears, because everyone's working from lots of different nationalities. And I think that's really helpful because it doesn't allow an individual to necessarily feel so inferior to another. Mm-hmm. Everyone is working, you're working next to someone that's Italian or German or Czech or Slovakian or Hungarian. And they're probably speaking in a language that's not their first language. Mm-hmm. So everybody is pretty much operating to the same sort of conditions themselves. I think also as well, what we have with the European Union and Poland's entry into the European Union, it has pretty much opened up a whole new world of opportunity for young people. So what we have is a huge generational shift. So your parents will never have had the same opportunities that you have to experience living and working elsewhere. And I think that generational change is evident in what I see, and I see very bright, optimistic young people that feel as though they have choices. They're not necessarily carving out an expected route that their parents would have probably expected them to have, particularly women, where in the past your mother or your grandmother would have probably had a very traditional upbringing where the role of the woman was pretty much around the family and the home and bringing up children, etc., etc. Whereas now I think there's a huge generational shift, and the Iron Curtain has disappeared, and there's this whole brave new world called Europe that is a whole raft of opportunities for individuals to go and explore. And I think Brussels is that really fantastic place where people can go. And it's in, and what you see when you're there is lots of ambitious, young, well-educated, talented people developing a new career. And that's what's quite fascinating.
Yes, when you told about this traditional role that we played in our past, I thought about some research that I've conducted in my past. It was called the self-silencing women. So I've checked. Self-silencing, it's some kind of the construct. The definition is when you don't meet your needs, you can call it self-silencing. So I've checked what will happen with the ladies, with the women, that if they not meet their needs. So everybody are important, everything around them is so important, but they put themselves on the end, you know, on this queue. And I found the important correlation between self-silencing and anxiety, loneliness, and the low self-esteem. So I think that sometimes we still pay this price, you know, and sometimes we still maybe play the role from our past. And sometimes the woman that I spoke in Poland and even in UK, they have some sense of guilty when they place themselves on the first position and they care about themselves. Because even I have to share with you some information that when I travel and I am in some conference or I conduct some workshops and I met men as a trainer, they always ask me who take care about my kids right now, and nobody ask them who will take care about kids when they are abroad. You know what I mean. So it's still, I think, that we have some assumption that the woman needs to stay in home or take care about kids. So it's really interesting what you told me right now. And I know that you are I know that in your office you work with a few foreigners as well, and I thought that maybe do you have some advices for people who wants to come to UK and build their life here. Maybe do you know what kind of challenge we have to meet or what kind of skills we need to develop to find ourselves here in, you know, in new country? Do you have some advice, Lloyd?
Do I have some advice?
Yeah.
My occupation is not a careers advisor, but one thing that I have found, I have people working in my office that are different nationalities. I have a Polish woman working in my office, and I always have interns from different parts of Europe. At the moment, we have a girl from Germany, and I also have two young men from San Sebastian in northern Spain. So we constantly have people in the office supporting us. And they're here primarily to develop their skills. And one thing that I've often found is the willingness, the hunger, I suppose, the hunger to learn and the hunger to develop those skills. I don't necessarily think there is a golden recipe in terms of advice and guidance. I think if you're doing this in England, the primary thing, which is the obvious thing, is the language, of course. Being able to, I don't necessarily mean you need to be an expert in all things English, but I think the ability to speak confidently in English and write accurately in English is, I suppose, the starting point. If you've got a good grasp of the language, then it's down to the individual. I think that's the first obstacle. And I think often what I've found is I've worked all over Europe, as I've said to you before, and I always find that I'm in quite a privileged position. And the reason why I'm in a privileged position is that most of the time the working language of any meeting would be English. It certainly wouldn't be Polish, and definitely not Hungarian or Finnish. I don't know whether you've tried to speak Hungarian or Finnish, but they're probably even more difficult than Polish. So I always find myself in a very privileged position because I'm able to articulate what I want to say very easily because I'm doing it in my own language. So I often think that everyone is always at a disadvantage because they're not speaking their first language. So I always have to acknowledge and bear in mind that sometimes someone's ability to get across the points that they want to get across or articulate the message they want to articulate is never going to be as easy for them as it is for me if it's not their first language. So I think the advice is that if you're looking to develop a career in England, I think the language is the first thing. And the only, and you're never going to learn that out of a book or by just going to a class. The only way to do that, I think, is by absolutely immersing yourself in the country, in the culture, and learning it on the job, as they say. And I think for young people, I think those that have proven to be most successful are those that have tried to take work experience, internships in various places. And I think, you know, I've seen a lot of young women between the age of 18 and 23, even 16 and 23, just go and take in unpaid often internships just to enrich their knowledge, enrich their experience, expand their experience and develop the confidence of working in the English language. So if you are a young woman or a young man in Poland and you're looking to try and develop a career in England, then I would absolutely advise you to try and take work experience opportunities. And I don't just mean in a bar or in a restaurant as a waiter or a waitress. I mean in an office environment, because then you'll get to be sending emails or dealing with their social media or answering the telephone and generally conversing with colleagues in the office in English. And I don't think there's any greater recipe for success other than learn the language, and the rest is then down to the individual. The confidence and the hard work is down to the individual, whatever your nationality, whether you're English, Polish or German. You have to have that inbred desire to want to work hard, to want to develop, to want to learn. And that's an individual thing, that's not a nationality thing.
Yes, you are right. And when you talk about it, about how we can learn English, that we have to immerse ourselves, I thought about comfort zone. That, for example, because I am on this process and you know that I'm struggling with my English, and sometimes it's really hard to say everything what I want to say. And when I compare myself in English, in Polish, I always prefer to speak in Polish, you know. But I thought that it has some connection, some link with embarrassment, because, for example, when you are the kid and when you are the kid and you made some mistakes, everybody understand because you are, you know, in the process of learning and you have this law to make a lot of mistakes. And when you are adult and you have to, and you show some mistakes and the people observe it, it's more difficult, you know, to start in to build your new life when you are the adult, even because of that reason. But thank you that you told about this internship and about placement, that we can develop our skills not only in bar or pub but in some office place, because I conduct this Design Your Life in the UK, and the idea of this program popped up in my mind when I work with some with one lady, and she spoke three languages, Spanish, Polish and English, and she was working in factory. And then I thought, oh my gosh, she's so intelligent, she speaks three languages and she still has physical work. That's something, it doesn't make sense for me. And you know that she prepared some list of companies in Birmingham that they work with Spain. So, you know, it's like import and export some product. and she sent, I think, 10 CVs, and they invited her to interview, and she got this job. And she told me that when she went for this interview and she saw this modern building with the red carpet, she told me, "Oh my gosh, Angelina, I don't fit there, you know." And I "No, you exactly, you know, fit there." And so sometimes we thought that we aren't good enough or we aren't prepared enough, but it's really good to try and give yourself this chance, because maybe somebody else judge that, yes, you are ready and I want to give you this job. What do you think to risk? Because sometimes you can, you will never achieve this level that you imagine or dream about, you know?
I think, again, it's, I don't necessarily think it's a nationality issue. My observations of the young women that I've met from Poland, most of the time they've spoken to me in English, which already means they speak more than one language, because they speak Polish and English. Often they will, some of them will speak Russian, and some of them will also speak German, and which is unlike young English women. I would imagine that 90% of young English women only speak English. So if you compare yourself in that respect, you know, I think it takes a talent to be able to speak and learn other languages. So any young person's ability to speak two or three languages already demonstrates that they have a proficiency and a talent, you know, to learn and develop. So I think that the example you gave about the woman, I think, is a good example, because the biggest obstacle, I think, for young people to develop their skills and their careers, the biggest obstacle is often themselves. Yeah, I think, and perhaps this is just my way of thinking, but I think you always have to aim high, and then when you get to where you think you've got to get, aim higher, and keep reaching, and keep aiming higher still. And I think the because, again, it's not about your nationality, it's about your own individual belief in yourself, your own confidence, belief in your own ability. And if you are well educated and well qualified, the rest of it comes with experience. And this is why I talked about trying to immerse yourself through internships and placements and work experience, because the confidence comes with the experience. And with the confidence and the experience comes the proficiency in the way in which you communicate and the way in which you liaise and work with other people. And then everything builds, it's like a snowball, and then it builds from there. But the worst thing is to be too self-deprecating in terms of where you think your expectations are. And this is why, when I said about my impression of Polish women is a positive one, it's because the Polish entry to the European Union has changed expectations. I think the expectations of young people in Poland today are different to the expectations young people had from the generation before, from their parents. Now, there is a big world outside of Poland to go and explore. And my experience has been that that the young Polish women do have a general hunger to aim higher and reach further, and they're absolutely doing that. And one thing that has also been an observation that you might find interesting is, I think there is a huge difference between the attitudes and the approach of Polish women than Polish men. I've found that Polish women have tended to be a lot more ambitious, a lot more adventurous, a lot more open and willing to learn and to experience and to develop, whereas Polish men, I think, have, in my opinion, from what I've seen, have tended to be a lot more reserved, a lot more have tended to step one foot backwards rather than the Polish woman that would take one step forwards. And part of this, I think, is because of the issue of the language, and perhaps the issue that you don't want to speak or open your mouth because you run the risk of looking stupid if you say the wrong thing or you use the wrong tense. And I get the impression that Polish men are very proud. The fact that Polish men are very proud, they would rather sit there and say nothing and let people think they're stupid rather than say something and confirm that they're stupid. You know, so I find that there is a reserved nature to Polish men, and there appears to be a less reserved nature to Polish women. I think Polish men are holding themselves back and they're not embracing the opportunities in the same way as Polish women are. That's my experience.
I'm so glad that you told about it, because yes, you have right. And you know, I think because now I can compare some education system in UK and in Poland as well. And when I observe how they treat my daughter, you know, Helenka in the school, so many stickers, you are the best, well done, good job. And I think that maybe you have much easier, and you have your self-esteem is flowing into your blood because you took it from your education. We had a little bit different system, a little bit more critical, that to point what you didn't do, you know, good. So do you think that education system in UK has some influence that you build some confidence?
Yes, I think there is the English curriculum, and I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the curriculum itself, but I think there is generally an approach taken in schools, and it's definitely in schools today. It wasn't necessarily so when I was at school, but certainly today it's a lot more of a focus on what kids can do rather than what kids can't do. And something that does develop the confidence of children is the way within which they try and celebrate achievements. And there's always lots of stickers and badges and awards for, you know, kids that have just done something nice. To, you know, at, I don't know, at Ellie's school, you know, she'll have a sticker because she's been kind today to somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, something as simple as that. Mm-hmm. But I think that that constant reward, recognition and acknowledgement of children doing things that are good, doing things that are kind, doing things well, it has to be acknowledged, and that does absolutely build the confidence. Whereas actually in some private schools there is a very much more stricter, more old traditional way of teaching. You know, where, you know, it's a very old-fashioned teacher stands at the front and the children sit there and they don't say anything until they're spoken to. And very old, and there are some very old, strict, traditional teaching methods that just doesn't work with some children, you know. But some of the old private English schools are still very traditional, and they will criticise and they will focus on the weaknesses. And there is a divided opinion over which approach is best. And I think it's a mix of both. I think you have to develop the weaknesses, highlight and develop the weaknesses, and you can't just ignore them and focus on all the good things, because what that would lead to, in my opinion, lead to an individual accepting something that may not be the best that they can be. So there has to be a balance of developing what is not so good and the weaknesses, as well as celebrating the strengths. It's like, I'll give you the example. The expression we often say is, it's not the winning that's important, it's the taking part. I don't agree. Winning is very important. It's also good to take part. It's also good to feel that you've not won, and because what you should always then do is be more hungry to do better, to reach higher, to do more, and to win. And I think sometimes you can have an overly sensitive and overly protective educational environment that is too kind to children and doesn't develop that sort of winning mentality and that that sort of aggressive streak in someone's desire to achieve more and be better. So I agree with you that there is that environment that develops children's confidence, because they do reward and celebrate and acknowledge things that are good, and I think that's really good for children. I think it's really important for children, but it does need to be balanced with a way within which you can be firm enough with children to identify where things they need to work harder and they need to develop. But both, I think it's a bit of both.
You know, for me, it was amazing when I came here, when we moved here, and I saw that a lot of people, I don't want to judge them, but they have some low expectation generally about their life, about the travel, about the education level, that it's enough what they have here. You know, for example, I met some people who didn't go abroad, or they wasn't in the plane even. And I thought, oh my gosh, so you didn't have so many hard issues in your history, and you have everything to travel. You don't need visa to go to Canada or Australia, and you have never been in the plane. Maybe it's about this hunger that you told, that that it's enough and they don't want to take this journey. I am a little bit afraid, because you told that the winning is important, but I think that sometimes we are so focused on the last point, and about we think about this winning, that we forgot about this whole journey, that you know that it's important still, and we forgot to have some fun of it. And it's like a point of my to-do list that, okay, I did it, I can go further, you know, towards something new. But it's, for me, for example, it's so important to see and acknowledge what was my point A, and when I am here, and maybe I'm in the middle, but I'm still happy that I achieved it, you know. So do you agree that the journey is still important, not only the win?
Absolutely. I think I think reaching and aiming high is really important, and wanting to win, I think, is really important. But it's like you've been a fly on the wall in some of the meetings that I have when I work across Europe with different partnerships, because what I always say to my staff is we have to be very clear on the destination. So we need to know what we want to achieve. All the learning is in the journey, and what we do when we're developing initiatives and projects with countries around Europe is the expression I often say to my staff is we must make sure that we record the journey, because when we're sharing knowledge and sharing best practice with countries around Europe, you don't learn from just the destination. And the destination is a report at the end of a project, but actually the report is based on everything you've learned along the journey. And I think that's the same with children. Their life experience as a child, their experience as a child will form very much their path in as an adult. And another aspect, I have two jobs at the local authority in Birmingham. I'm head of European and International Affairs, but I'm also head of Employment and Skills. So I run that department as well. And one of the critical issues that we face that we're trying to deal with young people is what we call intergenerational worklessness in households. It's where the grandfather perhaps has been unemployed, not worked, so as the parents, and they've proven to be quite poor role models for their children. So their children think it's acceptable, because they've been brought up in a family where expectations have been low, their parents and grandparents haven't necessarily been the right role models, perhaps they haven't been encouraged to really develop their education because their parents haven't or their grandparents haven't. So what happens is you pass down the generations an attitude to life and a way within which you approach the world and the world of work. And some of the biggest difficulties we have are working with young people that come from these family backgrounds, because they haven't had the right career guidance. And what we try to do now in the context of, we call it lifelong learning, is try to develop, and this is why I'm not always overly content with the English school curriculum, because I think we need to develop something, what we call from cradle to grave. So it's about getting hold of young people when they're young. It's not about dealing with their unemployment issues or their lack of skills when they're adults. You've got to deal with these things when they're young. I mean, you can't always necessarily count on their parents and their family home to provide that environment for them. So you need to get hold of children young, you need to start in the schools, and you need to build the attitude and build the desire and the hunger and the development at a young age, so they take that through to adulthood. And maybe that's why you talk about Polish women not having the self-confidence. It's probably because that self-confidence hasn't been instilled from parents. But I see a real attitudinal change now, is they're saying, well, that life that you had is not the life that I want, and I now want to create and carve out a different life for myself, but now the opportunities are there to do so, whereas before they were not.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what I thought about me and my daughters? Because, for example, Helenka, a few days ago, she told me, you know, mommy, what, probably I will write some book in my future. I said, yes, of course. And then I realized, yes, because her mom wrote some book. So for her, it's so natural that she can sit and write a book. For me, it was, you know, it sounds like a dream. And for her, it will be natural. So, yes, I totally agree with you. And I think that now we can go and eat some dessert, and I leave it on the end of our conversation, because I would like to ask you about Brexit. You know, about this monster that everybody are afraid, and maybe do you know something how it will look like? Maybe we can predict something. Are we safe here? Because a lot of Polish people, you know, think, oh my gosh, can I be here still? Or maybe I will need some visa, or maybe I will need some permission to work. Do you know something about?
I wouldn't necessarily say I know something about, but like everybody else with regards to Brexit, I have an opinion. My opinion is that it was the right answer to the wrong question. What I mean by that, when I say the right answer to the wrong question, I'm a full believer in democracy, and I'm a full believer in people exercising their wishes and their expressing their opinion through the power of democracy, the power of voting. Unfortunately, we gave the British public a vote on something about leaving the European Union. And what we had was a protest vote from the British public, and primarily a number of people that have felt that globalisation and economic wealth and economic growth that we talk about all the time hasn't reached them. And I think what we've had in the UK, and it goes all the way back to the 1980s when Margaret Thatcher was our Prime Minister, there has been a total, deterioration of conditions for working class people in the northern cities of the UK, north of London. Margaret Thatcher went ahead and introduced economic policies that destroyed traditional communities and working class families and communities, closing down mines that was big employers and car factories, and a lot of traditional working class industry closed during the 1980s and 90s. And I just don't think that a lot of these towns and cities across the UK have ever quite recovered from that economic policy of the 1980s and 90s. So they see the booming south of the UK and everybody making money, but nobody feels that in the north of England. And they feel, and in the current, we had a financial crash in 2008. And ever since, the UK, local government in the UK has had a crisis of austerity. You know, we're dependent on the government to provide grants to local government. And the northern cities have been crippled by cuts from their funding from government. So what people see around them is poorer public service, public services, they've had unemployment, poor education, low skills, and they feel as though they're left behind, and they was given a vote. And they was given a vote on leaving the European Union, and they use that, in my opinion, as their voice and to demonstrate and say, we're not happy. And I don't think there is any great trust in any political party. So trying to voice your opinion through a general election, I think there's a general distrust in politics. And so when it comes to a general election, they say, well, it doesn't matter who we vote for because none of it will make a difference or a change to my life. But this was different. This was a binary yes or no. Yeah, this was stay or leave. And they were what they were voting for, they were voting for something different. And I really don't genuinely think that the vast majority of UK citizens dislike Polish or any other EU migrants. They don't at all. In fact, many would share the opinion that I have, that many come over here with skills, with competences that we need, and I think they provide a lot to our local communities and our businesses, and they're a positive impact on our cities, not a negative impact on our cities. I think people, British people, have a problem with immigration, but it's not European immigration. Yeah, so they had a protest vote, and they voted to leave. Now, I think that the problem that we have is rising populism around Europe. And we have a lot of protests. We have a lot of protests in Poland. We have them in Austria. We have them in Hungary. We have them in Italy. And, you know, we've seen the rise of AfD, the populist party in Germany, Five Star in Italy, in the Netherlands, and in Austria. So it's happening everywhere. But I don't think any other country would be stupid enough to offer their people a binary decision, in or out, remain or leave, yes or no, because it's just the wrong way of doing it. And the observation, I don't think people in Poland would vote to leave the European Union anyway. And I think I said to you that my impression of how Poland has changed from when I first went there in, I think it was 2004, when you just joined the European Union, I could still feel the hangover of communism and the old Eastern European. When I went into the central station in Warsaw, it was the most unfriendly place I think I'd ever been in Europe. People wouldn't smile, people wouldn't talk to me, my first impression of Poland and Warsaw was not a very good impression. But then I've been maybe 10 times since then. And every time I go, I can see it's changed again and again and again. And now you walk down the streets and walk down the main road that takes you into the old town of Warsaw, and you see all the bars and all the young people sitting outside drinking. And there is just a completely different atmosphere and ambiance around Warsaw. Now, it's had 14 years worth of investment. So it's changed. It's had a lot of investment from Europe. So the benefits of being members of the European Union has been more significant for Poland than any other European member state. It's received more funding from Europe than any other member state. And I think that development in its infrastructure, that development in its people, in its skills, has changed Poland almost unrecognizably from what it was in 2004. To what it is in 2018. And then that, I think, is also breeding the confidence of young people. It feels like a cosmopolitan European city now, as opposed to a dark, cold, post-communist city that it felt like in 2004. So what I think few people are beginning to get frustrated by or not understand is, even in Poland, is there rising populism in Poland when it has benefited and changed so much for the better? You know, so I sometimes scratch my head and think, what are they protesting about? What is it that they're not content with? Because if you were to look not so far back, look back 15 years and look at what your cities and what your country was like then compared to what it is now. I think it's chalk and cheese. It's night and day. It's a very, very different place. And now the city feels, and the people, which is cities are for people. You know, each city is about its people. And I think what we have is an attitude of people that is a lot more optimistic about what the future holds for them. You know, I think there is a smile on people's faces because they have choices, their expectations are higher, and they feel as though what they would want to achieve in life is in grasp. It's down to them. It's absolutely down to them. And I don't think there's any golden recipe or golden bullet to say that's what you need to do. Regardless of your nationality, it's within yourself. It's within yourself to achieve higher, and I think, and to achieve more. And I just see that Polish women are embracing that new expectation more so than Polish men.
You are right, and thank you that you shared this information about Poland, that it was, you saw some changes, and because when we live in Poland, maybe it isn't for us so obviously, as for you, you know, because you visit during the time. And the last question will be about Brexit and about Polish migrants here, because we are here, and a lot of people has this question: can I stay here, you know, or have to pack all my stuff and come back to Poland because somebody will say to me, you know, you have to go, it isn't, you know, you don't have permission to stay here.
I genuinely don't think that's going to happen. It's still unclear if and how we're going to leave the European Union. Still, there is still, it's not in the European Union's best interest to give the UK a good deal. Why would they give the UK a good deal? Because if they give us a good deal, then it opens the door for any other member state to say, well, okay, we'll leave as well. And we want, it's critical for the European Union that it doesn't allow the UK to have all the benefits of being an EU member but not be an EU member. So it has to take away all those benefits, including the funding and the trade, the frictionless, barrier-free trade that allows you. 40% of the UK's trade is with Europe. You know, it's a phenomenal amount that will impact us really severely. So that's why I say if, because I think the deal will be such a bad deal. And parliaments are supposed to be able to be given a meaningful vote on the deal. And if they don't accept the deal, what happens? Does that mean that we just crash out with no deal, which would be a catastrophe? Does it mean that we put another vote to the people to say, do you give the people a meaningful vote as well as the parliament a meaningful vote? If you were to give the people a meaningful vote on a bad deal, maybe the outcome would be different, and they'd say we don't want to leave the European Union. I think if we were to have the vote again, I still think it would be close, but I don't think we'd vote to leave. I think we'd vote to stay. I still think many people that voted to leave before would still vote to leave now, because I think they become stubborn and entrenched, and they think that the government is working against the principles of democracy. And they say, and some people would get more angry because the will and the voice of the people has been ignored and they've not left the European Union. So some would get more entrenched in their opinion. But I think a lot more people now are beginning to see a lot of the cracks and the disbenefits of leaving the European Union that were not so visible to them during the original pre-referendum campaigns. In fact, the campaigns were dreadful. They didn't talk about any of the most critical, important issues about being a member of the EU. So people were misled, misinformed on both sides, leave and remain. Project Fear was given to all, and people were just misinformed. So not only were they protesting and voting about the wrong thing, they're even voting on misinformation and poor information. Now, the bad deal scenario, it means that's why I said if we leave. But assuming that we do leave the European Union, there's been a lot of talk about developing a migration system that's based on skills and competences. So what you have is, there has been talk, and we've talked about it in Birmingham, about regional visa type systems. So when you've got particular skill shortages, you have a visa system that attracts people with particular types of skills rather than people with no qualifications and no skills that are just coming to claim unemployment benefits. So there will always be migration opportunities coming into England. I just think the regime will perhaps change. And of course, what we've also seen as well is that people that have been here for, is it 5 years? I'm not quite sure, can apply for full-time residency and citizenship. And you can take those tests, etc., etc., which means you've got a permanent right to stay. You know, so I don't think that whatever is introduced after Brexit, I don't think that's going to lead and result in the need for anybody living and working in this country now to have to leave. It will not mean that. I don't think that for 1 minute. Because if it did, then it would apply to the UK citizens living overseas. You know, there are thousands and thousands of UK citizens living and working in other European countries. So whatever arrangements were made here in the UK, there will be reciprocal arrangements all over Europe. And no governments here or abroad is going to want to boot out migrants, because that would just be a complete disaster for our economies, but also the goodwill that we have in peace. And that's the biggest thing about Europe, that the European Union has given it. Yeah, it's given peace and stability, and that's the biggest benefit of Europe. When we think about, you know, not so long ago with the world wars that we had, and even more recently in the Balkans, you know, you have these dreadful wars, and what Europe gives you is peace. You know, and I think any migration system that could be so ruthless and cruel would absolutely destroy those principles of peace and goodwill, and so I don't see it happening at all.
Thank you, Lloyd. Now I can think a little bit more optimistic about our future in UK, you know, and it was huge pleasure to speak with you, and a huge honor for me that you want to be a guest in my podcast, and I hope that we can meet one more time or even more. So thank you one more time, and yes, and I'm really thankful.
You're welcome, and vive la Poland, and I'll be happy to meet your colleagues and your friends and meet with them and talk about my experiences, but actually about the opportunities that they have in there, because I think this country has lots of opportunities for young people of any nationality.